we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Follow the science. Follow the science. We hear it daily from the media. We hear it from our supposed leaders. The problem is that term, that statement, doesn't necessarily mean what they think it means. And in all honesty, it removes them from responsibility, because science doesn't make decisions. It doesn't get called upon when there are two paths. It doesn't have to, nor can it, decide between what is right and what is wrong. It only informs. People make decisions. And what we have to realize is those people are the people that we have put in charge, and they must be held accountable when they make decisions that they know were wrong. So Stuart Tankersley, I'm going to ask you a question. There's somebody that we've been reviewing his statements in basically a trial that we've been involved in. And he's somebody who we look to give us the best data and the best information and help us make decisions with that information. But I think what we've discovered is, even in his statements and testimony, compared to the data and the other things that have been revealed with the Pfizer release of documents, that he may be claimed to have been less than truthful. Tell us about it.
Unfortunately, what you just said is no better exemplified than that by the Reverend Dr. Peter Marks. Dr. Peter Marks is the director of the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research at the FDA. He directs the development, implementation of programs and policies for assuring the safety, purity, and potency of biological products, including vaccines. So once again, we have a scientist, somebody who interprets the science to give us ideas on which way to go. And as we've said before, scientists, or in my case in the military, I was an advisor to somebody, to the generals or whoever that made the decisions. I was simply an advisor based on the science. I, being the scientist, would make give him options. But he was responsible for making the ultimate decision. In a normal world, that's how things operate. And clearly, we have not been in a normal world in 28 months now.
Yeah, I think we have been kind of led to believe that science actually makes these decisions. But I think that is really a lie to the people. It's a way for people that are put in a difficult position. I don't question that Dr. Marks has a very difficult position, but if he was unable to make decisions in that position, he needs to step down and find somebody who will make decisions and stand by those decisions with integrity. Again, there's nothing wrong in science for a leader to say, I looked at the data, and at the time, I thought the data said this, and I was wrong. And I think that is one of the problems right now in medicine, is there is not enough physicians, scientists, leaders that can admit that what they said a year ago and at the time, based on the data they were looking at, might have been right to them, but it is no longer right. Instead, what we see is the Semmelweis reflex, which is that once more data or science is presented, they double down on their false assumptions. And I think we need more honest men in science. We need integrity returned to science. We need men that can admit they are wrong. I mean, I will tell you, Stuart, even within our own battle with COVID and with our patients, what I have tried and what I think works has changed. I have had times where I've said, well, this doesn't really work or this does work. That's part of being a good evaluator of the data that's been presented to you. Doesn't mean the data was wrong. It just means that the data didn't inform the way I thought it did.
Amen. And so with that opening, we are welcoming our audience once again to Tuesday, the first week of June, Tuesday's podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, Jordan. I think you're hitting on a major theme this week with this idea that we've been opening with, because we are in severe shortage of integrity in science, in the scientific community, and with the leadership of our country at large. We are in dire shortage of leadership based on truth, because science should be based in truth.
Exactly. And I think for one thing's for sure, on America Out Loud Pulse, we always like to look at science, but we also like to evaluate it honestly and admit when we're wrong. And I think that that's something that we will promise to you over the many weeks ahead, that even when we find something that's interesting, even when we say this might be something that we might want to go down a path for and evaluate, we'll also be honest when we say, you know what, that path wasn't exactly what we thought it was. Let's regroup and try again. So let's go back to Dr. Peter Marks, Stuart. You have interfaced with his statements, I think, in a federal court proceeding. And some of the things that they utilize in that court proceeding, when they're compared to what is been released by the court in regards to the Pfizer documents, do not necessarily line up. And I think, I guess, go ahead, Stuart, give us a couple of those examples and read through them for us.
Yeah, Jordan, I want to start with in going over these. Unfortunately, a year and a half ago, it occurred to me, because of the lack of dialogue, it's been so alarming from the beginning of this that there is no allowance for any dialogue, as we've said countless times. And this is exactly where I knew we were headed. Finally, there would be days when we would be able to present the evidence. And then when the light of day is shown on what they have been doing, there will be unequivocal answers as to who needs to be held to account. And this is the first example of that that I know of. This was a hearing that I was asked to be a witness for on March the 10th of this year. The hearing was on March the 10th. It was an emergency hearing that I was asked to be a part of the week before. It was based off of a hearing that first started in November, and then the follow-up hearing was set for the second week of February of this year. Then there was an emergency declaration for the hearing that we were a part of. At the February hearing, after the hearing, the DOD presented Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, is the defendant. He had four sworn affidavits, or in federal court, they're called declarations. And one of them was by the revered Dr. Peter Marks, MD, PhD, and we've introduced who he is. And he makes several astounding statements. Now, I'm not sure he would have made those statements had he known that on March the 1st, 3 weeks later, there was going to be a data dump. And in that data dump, we've talked about before, and it's been widely discussed, was that 38-page document. And in that 38-page confidential, on every page, bold letters, confidential, confidential, it was an internal memo between the FDA and Pfizer. So this is a very important document that has shown, I believe, what could be interpreted as fraud. Clear, unequivocally. So in Dr. Peter Marks of the FDA top guy at the FDA for these biologics. He is making these declarations, which I find astounding. Remember, the document that the 38-page document was the first 10 weeks of the evidence given for the safety or lack thereof of Pfizer's vaccine. And here are some of the information that Dr. Peter Marks of the FDA gives us. In his statement, he says it is reasonable to believe that the product may be effective in diagnosing, treating, or preventing that disease or condition, and the known and potential benefits of the product outweigh the known and potential risks of the product, and that there is no adequate approved and available alternative to the product. These are things that we are aware of, that he was aware of. He knew that the effectiveness of these vaccines, even though in this he says it's up to 100% effective. In his testimony, he says it's up to 100% completely effective in preventing severe disease. These vaccines, as he calls them, are completely effective. Not so as we now know, everyone now knows.
Yeah, well, I would say it depends on what effectiveness they're defining as well, because the primary endpoint of the original trial was prevention of infection. And very, very rarely in medicine are you, I would say very rarely, maybe never, are you allowed, or at least the FDA doesn't allow you to all of a sudden change your primary endpoint. I think it's only ever happened once, and I think it actually happened with remdesivir and Fauci, in terms of he changed it from prevention of, or more basically mortality prevention, versus he all of a sudden changed it to days in the hospital or days ventilator free, I think was the other thing. So again, when you set out on a trial, it's very important to state your objective. You can have secondary or tertiary endpoints, but if your primary endpoint fails, it's basically the FDA will say, well, if your primary endpoint is now was your secondary endpoint, you might want to go redo the trial, because again, the primary endpoint has to be the primary endpoint for the data they're revealing. I mean, it'd be, imagine having a blood pressure medicine that all of a sudden you're like, well, it doesn't work for blood pressure, but it does seem to help for heart failure. I don't think the FDA would let you get away with that.
Change in mid-course. It is astounding what Lord Fauci has allowed to get away with. Then on page 6, he's talking about in his sworn statements before the federal court, vaccine manufactured at sites listed in the BLA also undergo lot release, which is designed to ensure conformity and standards applicable to the product. They must meet specified standards of purity and potency. We have clearly found that is not the case. There was a huge, earlier this year, there was a huge editorial by the British Medical Journal as to this question. Do you remember that, Jordan?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was...
Yeah. This is not something some conspiracy people that want to see Lord Fauci removed from office. These are evidence-based decisions and statements that are appalling at the least.
Yeah, and I think just to say that initially is... Just you to be honest, as an honest interpreter of the science, to make sure that something that is so mass produced is going to have equal, what I would call quality controls, so tightly regulated, is almost even in its best, even in best intentions, is almost impossible to do. But to do it under duress and do it without probably a lot of the other things that you can, what I would call comparative quality analysis, is almost impossible, especially with a biologic. So again, I understand an honest arbiter of this would say, look, we needed to get this out to 6 billion people. We don't have time to make sure every manufacturing plant is under the exact same, you know, quality control. But that would be an honest arbiter telling you what he honestly understood instead of just straight up lying, saying, and then again, hiding behind the FDA and saying, well, if the FDA did it and they, the BLA, you know, it were approved it, then it has to be perfect. That's kind of circular reasoning. Well, how can you, how can you prove it's this way? Well, if we allowed it, it has to be perfect. And so that's
here. Yeah, exactly. This next statement, it goes exactly to your circular logic you just described. So here he is saying the FDA considers these lots to be manufactured in compliance with the BLA, and they are not subject to the EUA requirements when used for the approved indication. Thus, the conditions in the letter of authorization for the EU, including the condition using, including the condition requiring vaccination providers, listen to this, including the condition requiring vaccination providers to provide recipients with the fact sheet for recipients, which advises recipients that, quote, under the EUA, it is your choice to receive or not receive the vaccine. They do not apply when these lots or other BLA compliant lots are used for the approved indication. Amazing statement. Also, for operational efficiency, to account for the fact that recipients may either may receive either the BLA or the EUA vaccine, one for providers and one for recipients. It's amazing, these fact sheets, have you seen them? I doubt that anyone has.
Yeah, I would imagine they don't exist in a easily, I mean, you could. Again, this goes back to the fact that all previous vaccines, I mean, the VIS sheet that we have in the clinical practice is amazingly important. If you don't actually give that with the vaccine, then you're considered almost to have violated or really not even given the injection. I mean, that's how important that little sheet goes along with the vaccines to describe it. Now, does everybody read that VIS or vaccine information data? Nah, I would say no. It's probably less than 10%. But the fact that it's there and the fact that it has to be given shows you how important that is. And before this pandemic, in terms of us informing our patients and informing people that receive treatments about what they're getting.
Right. And what's so interesting in this paragraph of his affidavit or declaration, sworn statement, he says, see the fact sheet for recipients, and so he's talking about the VIS, dated September 22nd, 2021. When did the vaccines roll out?
That would have been December 2020.
Yeah, right. And so what is amazing, he's talking about the commonality, but there...
Previous to that, I don't think there are anyone that existed.
That's right. That's right. As we shared before with the state health officer, Alabama state health officer, when he got his vaccine or jabs, they didn't give him one. And being on the vaccine advisory committee for the state of Alabama, when I was selected by the governor, that was one of the things several people asked, when are we going to be able to get these sheets? When are we going to be able to inform our patients? Oh, they're coming out. They're coming out. They're coming out. And they wouldn't come out. It was really amazing that this was allowed to go on. And clearly, back to the letter from the end of February 2021, the data that came out then that the FDA and Pfizer knew, they were not releasing that data because it was all confidential.
All right, Stuart. Again, this is America Out Loud Pulse. We will be back. Continue to talk about this document from Dr. Marks and compare it to what is the truth.
Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthySolid.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any HealthySolid product. Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly, acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products: toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
Okay. Hey, thank you. Welcome back today to America Out Loud podcast. Dr. Jordan Vaughn and I, Stuart Tankersley, are going over the science. Does science lead? No. Science is evidence for leaders to make decisions. The humanity that is implicit in the scientific discovery process and the determination of what evidence is to be used to make further decisions, it revolves around the human deciders, not just the science leads, as we have been misled in the past 2 years. So today we're discussing an important document of Dr. Peter Marks, who is the director for the FDA and overseeing the evaluation and implementation of different agents like vaccines. And we're going through a sworn statement he gave the court in February of this year. And there are several astounding statements that he makes that I hope that other people in high positions will evaluate and determine, does this bureaucrat deserve, number one, to keep his job? Number two, has he been fraudulent? I think he makes sworn statements on the side of the defendant, the Secretary of Defense, in this case, court case. So today we're looking, right now I'm looking at page 8 of the affidavit. And once again, he talks about several of the roles that he plays, that his agency plays, and maintaining integrity, and that the vaccines undergo the appropriate trial processes. There's clear evidence that several of those have been breached. Several of those standards have been breached throughout the last 2 years. And he makes some astounding statements in this affidavit. On page 10, Jordan, you have it sitting there with you. I'm going to read a few of the sentences here. Although this certain study is ongoing, and safety will be evaluated for the duration of the study for blinded and unblinded participants, because most adverse events linked to vaccination occur within 2 months of vaccination. So Once again, most. So we're looking at 50.1% of the patient of the adverse events. You and I have talked before with a neurologist, and it looks like the average day from the vaccine to stroke is 150 days. I think that goes past 150 is after 60 days or 2 months. So they're looking for the easiest way out. In other words, to excuse themselves for overlooking several of the dangers that these biological agents have posed to so many people. And then further in this statement, he says, FDA determined that a BLA for a COVID-19 vaccine could be supported by 6 months of safety data. I would dare to say before the last 28 months, before the insanity of the last 28 months, that we would always make a different statement in such a in evaluating such a product. And I'll reread it in the way I think it should read. FDA determined that a BLA for a COVID-19 vaccine should be supported by 6 months of safety data. But, you know, could be, should be, who's splitting hairs when we're only dealing with millions of lives, right? And then later in the sentence, because the applicant submitted sufficient safety and efficacy data, the ongoing nature of the phase three clinical trial was not a basis for declining the license for Comirnaty. Wow. Here is the same man who in February, after the first 10 weeks of the vaccine rollout, in a very confidential statement, said that there was, how many? 42,000 injuries in those by that point in the world?
And a significant, I mean, compared to what they stopped the swine flu trial, which was after 50 deaths, I would say quite easily, regardless of what you think about the data. I think at that point it was definitely in the thousands. So, I mean, right. We're talking about a quite different data set than would have previously been questionable.
Right. Over 1,000 deaths, right. That's within the first 10 weeks that they knew about, right? Remember? Over 1,000 deaths. I think it might have been 1,400, actually. And probably exponentially more than that, but because the applicant submitted sufficient safety and efficacy data. Wow. They made that determination based in the first 10 weeks that it was sufficiently safe. I think with his name all over that document, there should be an evaluation for fraud.
And I would say the other thing is, despite the unblinding, the data collected during the trial still allowed FDA to evaluate the safety and efficacy. So that's an interesting statement as well, because they made the assessment that 2 months, they had all the safety data they needed. And most of us realize that any therapeutic, it is true that usually most of the adverse events are going to pop in fairly quickly, but there's a considerable amount. It might be less than 10%, but it's still a significant amount that are going to show up later. And for them to say, hey, well, it's unblinded. And by the way, that is a fancy word for saying we got rid of all the controls in a trial. Yeah. What that means is, you know what? Actually, when you look at the data, I think they ended up crossing over. Everyone got the vaccine that was in the trial, even if they were blind, or even if they were the placebo, or they were blinded at the end of the 2 months, they were allowed. It sound, I would actually argue that they were encouraged to get rid of the placebo arm, but I don't have a way to prove that. But once you do that, you are basically eliminating your source for ongoing information, because at that point you're then actually flying truly blind by unblinding.
So. Right. This is on page 11, paragraph 19. He makes an astounding opening statement. In addition to reviewing clinical data before approving the Comirnaty BLA, FDA assessed, among other things, its chemistry, Manufacturing and Controls, CMC. Non-clinical and clinical pharmacology and non-clinical toxicology data, safety and pharmacovigilance data, labeling and manufacturing facilities. There have been countless entities on our side of the fence, as well as others like the British Medical Journal, calling for a reevaluation as to if that all is true. It is clearly
even whistleblowers, I think, in terms of some of the clinical trial sites. And then obviously we know that some of the places that they manufactured these vaccines had to be shut down for a time period. So again, I'm not sure that all of those statements, I mean, I guess they could probably on their face be, he could state they're true, kind of like, you know, you had that person that in the court that would say one thing, but he's saying it in a way that kind of doesn't actually pin anything down. I mean, a lot of these things, obviously, I doubt, you know, when they had these declarations, I think they were lawyered over pretty well in terms of their sentence structure and implications to who was actually stating.
Well, I think that this affidavit was probably lawyered over very well, but this was just 3 weeks before the release of that confidential memo, which clearly shows that their lawyers were either unaware or were deceptive in preparing this document, because it is an astounding statements that have been proven not true time and again. Paragraph 20, he says that up to 100% that these vaccines or supposed vaccines provide up to 100% avoidance of severe infection.
Well,
even
that, Stuart, really bothered me was, he says, based on the data from the two clinical studies, FDA determined that the overall efficacy rate in the 16 and older subject population was 91.9% for the prevention of COVID-19 infection. And I will ask our audience, if that's true, first of all, he made this at the time that it was being – you know, again, the approval letter was August 23rd, 2021. And I think everybody knew at that time that 95% efficacy that they stated in September 2020 was not conducive in the real world. That was not the reality. And here's the other thing is 100% avoidance of severe infection. That's almost laughable that anyone in medicine would ever say that.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just astounding what this sworn statement.
And I agree that based on the data from two clinical studies, the problem was those two clinical studies were done when there was a completely different virus, in all honesty, in terms of its infectiousness was circulating. So yes, true, maybe this is going to prevent the Alpha strand or the Wuhan strand from doing something, but Stuart, last time I checked, those were extinct. So you're approving a product for something that doesn't even exist.
You're giving them much more latitude and grace than I think the evidence has proven. As you know, the initial studies did not prove that you had anywhere close to 100% effective in preventing severe disease. They removed a lot of those subjects from the category of receiving the vaccine.
Yeah.
Because the vaccine, there's no potential way it can cause damage, according to them, when in fact we have known from their own data that they can.
And
it is such a fraudulent statement.
It goes back to the other thing that I think Del Bigtree always says, you know, it's the supermans that are among us that are in these trials. But, you know, it's funny to say, whoa, we're going to have the elderly and we're going to have the immunocompromised get these vaccines first. I'll ask Stuart, how many immunocompromised or elderly people were involved in that original trial?
They weren't. That's exactly right. They were not.
So
neither were pregnant women, neither were children. I mean, were nursing children.
Yeah.
It is astounding what they have done with this data that they knew.
So again, I would ask our audience, if you're going to take a medicine and that medicine was not studied not studied in your particular purview, but it was actually your particular disease, particular immunocompromised state or age were excluded for the most part from that trial, would you not be more likely to say, hey, I need to evaluate this a little bit more circumspectly than to just take, you know, just to take it off the shelf. I mean, again, I think one of the things we all assume is when we're talking about studying a medicine or any intervention, it should be studied in the population that it's going to be approved for and recommended for.
Yes. So once again, throughout these 16 pages, there have been many proven misstatements, at least fraudulent statements, apparently. And I'll conclude with the following. On page 14, he says, the FDA also considered and responded to petitioners' claims that people previously affected with COVID-19, quote, are likely to have immunity to subsequent infections for as long or longer than immunity conferred by vaccines, and, quote, may also be at heightened risk for adverse effects from the vaccine, finding there was scientific uncertainty about the duration of immunity from natural infection and that petitioners had not provided sufficient scientific support for the latter claim. What in the world? Now, this whole trial, this whole hearing that we were talking about, he just opened up a whole new can of worms. It's very unfortunate that he got away with it because he did not show up. I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but at the March emergency hearing, the judge strongly invited but did not order Dr. Marks and the other claimants to come in. But they did not show up. But
and
this idea,
I think, Stuart, that again goes to that they don't want to be cross-examined. But I think that's the thing that our organization has complained about since day one is the lack of dialogue. Cross-examination in the court system is tough, but dialogue in the scientific setting is imperative for any kind of truth. And they just want to avoid it. They say, here's our data. Oh, you're going to ask us a question? Well, we won't be there for those questions. And that's the problem. And so that's why we have a product on the market that is the questioning of the efficacy and the safety of this product has not been done by the leaders. It's been done by the people that it's been inflicted upon. And I think that is always a bad sign. And that really is what forces our profession to be under the microscope in terms of our integrity. And I think,
yes, no question. It is so sad that our profession, the scientific community of practicing physicians, we have relinquished our responsibilities like we've talked about from day one on these podcasts. We have relinquished the responsibilities that we have to our patients and to the public at large, not the public health officer. He doesn't have that obligation. You and I, as individuals confronting individuals on a daily basis, we are the ones responsible and accountable for that.
Yeah,
we have relinquished that.
We should be holding the public health officer responsible for him following the dictates of these people that are not necessarily being honest. The last thing we want in medicine is for the people to discover the problem. And don't get me wrong, I think in medicine, a lot of times we have messed up. We have had things that we think work that don't. But it's a lot easier and a lot more honest for the people inflicting them, or what I would say using them, to fess up and say, hey, these aren't working like we thought they were. We need to go back to the drawing board. But that's not been done.
No, it's clearly not. And what's so truly troubling is the fact that I doubt 1% of Americans believe the people responsible for this catastrophe will truly be held to account for what they have done. And that is so disappointing. It's a big indictment of the culture at large, not just our profession.
But it's designed that way, Stuart. The problem is, I mean, just think about what we would call standard of care in the hospital, which is that, you know, intubation, remdesivir, dexamethasone. I would love for you to find an author, because I swear you won't find one. And the reason is not because no one wants, you know, not because there wasn't an author, but no one wants to put their name on that. Because the second they do, they are held responsible for really bad, really what I would say medical decision making. But anyway, but it's designed to be nebulous. It's designed, this appeal to science is to basically remove the person, the stakeholder, the leader from really, I mean, you can't call that standard of care in front of a grand jury. I mean, and it's meant to be that way. And I think we've got to get back to where people can state science, but they also have to sign the decision by who made it. I'm not a big fan of
responsibility.
I'm not a fan of Sarbanes-Oxley, but back in the day when there was a lot of the Enron and WorldCom and accounting scandals, once that law meant that the CFO and CEO had to sign off on the quarterly statements as saying that these are in their best estimate, the full faith that these are correct and without fraud, a lot of CEOs and CFOs stepped down because they didn't want to go to jail.
Right. And look even closer to who was found guilty for the fraud and the deceptions of the crisis that imploded the economy in 2008. No one.
Exactly.
And so that's unfortunate. And until our country starts to wake up and understand that we have a moral obligation in our individual lives, I'm concerned that this disaster will continue to be perpetuated on all of us.
All right. Well, we will be back for our final segment on America Out Loud Pulse. We are happy to have you here this Tuesday, and we will continue to review this document that Dr. Marx stated and declared and compare it with reality.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Our edition of Tuesday's America Out Loud Pulse. I am Dr. Stuart Tankersley, along with Dr. Jordan Vaughn. And along with us on Tuesdays, we want to thank you for joining us, but also want to point you to Monday's edition with Dr. Mary Singleton of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, as well as on Wednesdays, the wonderful Dr. Peter McCullough. On Thursdays, Dr. Peter and Ginger Bregan, and on Fridays, Dr. Jack Weiler. Thank you again for joining us. And today we're talking about this: does the science lead, or do humans, the scientists, help make leadership decisions? We've gone through an example today. We've been going through several of the statements, sworn statements by the top FDA immunologists, immunology vaccine researcher who approves things for us at the FDA. And several of his statements in his affidavit in February are astounding given the data that he clearly had at his disposal and which he signed off on back a year before. Several of the statements today we've gone through, and I'll just end with the last paragraph. Actually, it's the third to last sentence in his statement. One of the most significant barriers to widespread vaccination is vaccine hesitancy and vaccine misinformation. Period. End of sentence. If that isn't the kettle calling the pot black, I don't know what is. It is amazing that he would make such an assertion, but apparently, after a career of being a bureaucrat in this huge agency, he's gotten away with it with impunity. It's just amazing that he would make a sworn statement in federal court to such absurdities.
Yeah, evidently, so, they assume that data and the analysis of data only works when it's inside the FDA's house. And I think that's the problem. What they're really saying is, as the dissemination of information is more readily available, it's almost like the printing press all of a sudden becoming, available for the church clergy to all of a sudden be evaluated on the documents they say exist and are true. In the same way, a lot of the last probably 30 years of our information and our ability to exchange information across multitudes of people outside the high church of science has, what's really the problem is not that their data is wrong. It's that all of a sudden, when you put this data in the hands of the unclean, that that they're going to misinform people because only they can look at data in an objective way. And I think that's the problem. Again, it's this high church that,
Right. It is so true what you're pointing out. And, today's edition has been we've exposed a lot of the shameful acts and statements made by those that our government has in its leadership positions. But, I think we should end today more on a positive note like we usually do, which is, I think that the silver lining is taking over the cloud. What I mean by that is the silver lining that is the hope and the good effects of what we've been through, which have been few and far between. The ultimate is, in my view, and the evidence I've seen is more and more people, both in the physicians as well as the public at large, are starting to understand that there are other things outside of the medical industrial complex that benefit their health, whether it is simply being outdoors or getting some sunshine or taking vitamin D or other healthy vitamins and supplements, exercising. This is a dividing line, I think, between the way things have been done in our whole career in the last, I would say, 60, 70 years in science, in medicine, where people are starting to lay claim of the other ways of health, of benefiting their health that we have avoided to a large extent in our culture and in the West, because there are other things that are just as healthy, if not healthier. And there are several of the comments and podcasts that have been going on America Out Loud, and several of the products that are supporting our podcast that go exactly to this. Let's get back to the underlying principle, underlying knowledge we have of the human anatomy and what is going on with normal physiology. And let's try and maintain that paradigm rather than chasing it with a medicine and another medicine and another medicine.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I agree. I think one of the things that I think informs us as Christians is that we have humility for a creator that knows more than we do. And when you're a physician, amen. And actually I would argue that most people that I would want to ever see are going to be physicians that have that humility and understanding. The problem is our science or discipline is set up to create hubris in us. And that is the pride that is really the downfall of man throughout history, but it is especially evident in government, and it's evident in medical government. These are people that think they're smarter than the average bear, and they think that their interventions are better than anything that can be done outside their intervention. And that sets us up for problems every time. I think most of the time it's the pride of physicians and pride of our discipline that have been our downfall. And if you look for the last 100 years, most of the time it's when we didn't admit that we didn't know that we get called to the table to say, well, that's kind of embarrassing. And I think we need to take a big piece of humble pie and realize that the last 2 years have revealed that in our medical profession, that we need to be a lot more humble and a lot more realistic about what we as people with our recommendations can actually do.
You know, it's that's a perfect way of summing it up, Jordan. Thank you for bringing that up. And I think the clearest example of that in another profession is what the Supreme Court recently and unfortunately in disclosed secret documents, someone inadvertently, never happened before, but who is opposed to the Christian view that human life begins at conception. And now they're trying to, it looks like, praise the Lord, they are going to overturn Roe v. Wade and return it to the states to make the decision.
Yeah.
And there was that in and of itself is an example of the humility that is required in any professional. And I think the example given to us by the U.S. Supreme Court in saying we've gotten this wrong the last 50 years with the 60-plus million babies being killed, that we're gonna put an end to this, hopefully. Well, that's exactly what's required. Humility to say we've gotten this wrong, we're going to reverse this, and that's what needs to happen in science at large today. We need to put the medical industrial complex back in its box. And it's going to take the leaders and the scientists, those that are doing the day-to-day work, the physicians, for example, it's going to take we have to wake up and accept the responsibility we have. And I think we're going to begin to do it more and more.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good example to me of, I guess it's Harry Blackburn that actually made that decision of trimesters and all that. But what you have to again realize is at the time that was what I would say scientific authorities were telling him happened in the womb. Obviously as more science came about, it was pretty obvious that the intricacies and the understanding of fetal development, as well as just embryology, was so not only misinformed, but so what I would call just limited. And the more it makes him look like an idiot now, but at the time, I mean, that was what his great, scientific minds told him. And I think that again goes back to this hubris to assume that what is stated by these scientific authorities is always 100% correct. At sometimes it's just what they're able to see. They weren't able to use ultrasound or genetics at that time. And again, as we continue to find ways to get more information, the evaluator of that information is not necessarily at that point. I mean, the information might have been limited, but as that information develops, he can't say the same thing continually. Eventually, people call them to the table and say, well, now that we know this, what you're saying doesn't make sense. And I think that's what Marks here, Peter Marks, the doctor at the FDA, needs to realize is a lot of things he's stating might have been true September 2020, but it ain't September 2020, Mr. Marks or Dr. Marks. Let's be honest.
Amen. And so with that, we're going to sign off on today's podcast, and thank you for joining us. And we are hopeful that y'all will join us again next Tuesday, as well as the other hosts that give wonderful insight, accurate information, and with humility the other days of the week, here on America Out Loud Pulse.